Good evening. This is Mae Brussel in Carmel, California, now continuing our broadcast as World Watchers, no longer Dialogue Conspiracy. I don't really know why I changed the name, except that I think World Watchers is more significant at this time. It's number 328, and it's June the 16th, 1978. I spent the last week, two hard days, reorganizing my library. I used to have my books on assassinations of John Kennedy in chronological order, starting with the very first year that John Kennedy was killed. Afterwards, Joe Jostein wrote a book, Oswald, Assassin or Fall Guy. And I thought it would be interesting for historical purposes to put them in the chronology with which the critiques surfaced and what kind of information they came out with, but that's impossible to find when you get really busy, so I had to break the books down into the order of the author and put them in alphabetical order. I have enclosed for you a sheet on the library sections of my research so that you can see the categories of books that I have. And these sections run anywhere from, say, 180 books or 190 on the Warren Commission, on the criticism of the Warren Commission, or defending it, whatever, anything that's been written about the assassination of President Kennedy. Not his policies. That goes under the historical section, under the 60s and 70s, but just on the evidence of the conspiracy or no conspiracy. There are many in that section, and also the next largest section, or equally as big, is the one on government agencies, on the CIA and the FBI and intelligence operations. My library now has each of these listings in with the cardboard dividers separating them, and the books are divided into the assassination of John Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, George Wallace, the Manson family, Ted Kennedy and the Chappaquiddick affair, and Malcolm X. Now, everything in those categories, in those six categories, is complete. That means that everything that's been published on those subjects I have, and if they're out and I don't have them, then I don't know about them. I want to keep this library intact for future generations, and I don't want to have half the books or be accused of being selective in what I read. Therefore, I have everything on that subject. Then there's a long shelf about 9 feet long with political deaths, what I call political implications, such as Kent State or the Algiers Motel or the airplane crash of Amelia Earhart or the killing of Bruno Hauptmann, the charges of killing the Lindbergh baby, and possibly assassinating the wrong person for that crime. My political deaths go from A so far to S or V, Algiers Motel to Sacco Vanzetti. As I say, the books on the intelligence system include those that are listed, the FBI, the CIA, the IRS, ITT, and so forth. I have a section on narcotics, drugs, and organized crime, the Watergate. Watergate alone is 20 or 25 books, and the hearings before the Senate Select Committee. I have the hearings up to about volume 1 to 12, and at 19 and 20, I missed the ones in between. I ran out of money, and I think I have to order them soon, and I hope that they're not out of print. The mind control section, books by Jose Delgado on the physical control of the mind, that's an older one up to a new one that came out just this month, War on the Mind by Peter Walston. The history books are broken into four categories with dividers in between, the Civil War up to World War I, the conspiratorial parts of it, the things that are of interest to me that show up later, the 1914 to 1945, from the breaking of the Versailles Treaty to the end of World War II, and then from 46 through 50, that four-year period that set the groundwork for the Nazification of the world, when the CIA was formed with General Bedell Smith, and where Alan Dulles had the role of financing and organizing Adolf Hitler's chief of intelligence, Reinhard Gehlen. He set the network as the deputy director of the CIA to set the Nazi network with their unlimited counterfeit money all over the world and American money besides. Those 4 years were the key to what's happening in Africa today, the Middle East today, and affecting our lives. Those were the very important years. And then the 60s and 70s, the years of the Vietnam struggle, Reverend Moon riots, assassinations, as I said above, books on certain countries, such as Death of Democracy, the overthrow of Greece in 1967, the turning of various countries into Nazi governments, that history from the 60s that we're living through presently that goes into that category. Books on NASA. NASA was formed by the Nazi space scientists Wernher von Braun and Walter Dornberger, war criminals that should have been hung at Nuremberg, and then NASA was headed by President, Vice President then Lyndon Johnson, who worked with NASA, and books on the faking of the moon landing. The banking section, Who Rules America, The Rich and the Super Rich, Do You Really Want to Be Rich? Books on corporate banking profits and the money men. Prison systems. Not only do I have people like George Jackson under the deaths for political implications, but the letters of George Jackson, the story of American prison systems or prisons around the world. Books on justice. Those are the things to watch, such as in Germany, because it was Seymour Melman's book that describes how the courts in Germany stopped working and the people who were guilty were outside functioning and the innocent many times were locked up and the court trials didn't work. And these are by famous authors or about them, such as F. Lee Bailey, and critiques of the justice system as it exists. Books by and about the Fourth Estate, exposés of Drew Pearson, Jack Anderson, various movie scandal writers like Hedda Hopper and Luella Parsons, and then a section on the occult and magic and mystical, the Illuminati, the Thule Society, secret societies. There's one section on UFO books. I don't have very many of them. I have more magazines and articles. I don't have any definitive really good books on UFOs, but I have other sections of magazines and work on that. The religious conspiracy goes into the conspiracies of the Vatican, the Jesuits, the Mormons, and the CIA, government collusion with religion. There aren't too many books out associating religion with assassinations and conspiracies, but there are references to these people in articles and magazine articles, but I do have some books, about 8 or 9, on the religious aspect of the conspiracies. And then I have this one wall. It's about 9 feet wide, maybe longer, maybe 11 feet, and I have bibliographies up at the top going from Agnew to the Warburgs, and in between, famous personages, Howard Hughes, just the name here doesn't indicate how many books. I have every single book that's been written about Howard Hughes. I don't know of any that I haven't collected. And then there's books of Richard Nixon, books about Alger Hisk, Whitaker Chamber. These are in alphabetical order. I had trouble whether to put them into the Cold War section, into the 50s, the trials, or whether to put them into the bibliographies. It's very hard to know when you're trying to put this amount of work together. And then one section on radiation or cancers or poisons or virus, like mind control, physical problems and physical conspiracies, and then one on oil conspiracies, plutonium, oil, mineral. There are books coming out now talking about the various oil conspiracies and the ripping off of certain minerals and commodities on planet Earth, and those go under resources. I think it's important for people to know the classification that I separate for research and how I come to some of my conclusions, the sources of my information, and hopefully in time I'll be able to have a printed flyout of the material, the books that I possess, in each one of these categories so that some of you can cross-reference or refer to that material or look up these books yourselves in the library if you want to do that. If we follow the same reasoning, the same line of thinking of how we see the world, or at least how I've seen it through my research and had come to certain conclusions, then by listing these categories, you can follow it more easily, and I think that's important. In the next few weeks, I'm going to separate my filing cabinets and reorganize those into subject categories in a more systematic way than when I originally started. Again, they are all clogging up together, and the cross-filing is impossible because I don't have a team or an organization here or a computer. But after I get the major categories of the filing system separated, I'll spend the next few weeks after that separating the amount of newspaper articles that are not filed, and hopefully by the fall be ready to just sit down and write some books and articles and concentrate on reaching a larger master, the printed word. One of the most important books in my library has to do with the Nazis, the overriding theme of my research. It's called Galen, Spy of the Century by E.H. Cookeridge, written and ran by it was published by Random House in 1971. It was written by Mr. Cookeridge. And there are parts of that book that explain what is coming down now. If you read that book and study it, then you can understand the headlines of 1978 or 79 or 1980. I want to just read with you a couple of sentences from the beginning of the book and then jump to one section called Friends of Egypt and Israel on page 352, 353, which has to do with Alan Dulles, Reinhard Galen, and the Nazis in the Middle East. The book begins by saying that Alan Dulles, in 1947, helped charter the Central Intelligence Agency. He wanted, in quotes, to create an effective intelligence agency, and we must have in key positions men who are prepared to make this a life work. The agency should be directed by a small but elite corps of men with a passion for anonymity and a willingness to stay at that particular job. We must find that their reward is primarily in the work itself. Now, these silent men surfaced at Watergate like they had never surfaced before. A few were fired after the Bay of Pigs invasion, when John Kennedy called off the invasion of Cuba, and names appeared, spy masters such as Alan Dulles, although he was pretty public as a spy master all along. But after Watergate, we learned of the names of Robert Mayhew and E. Howard Hunt and William Buckley and James Angleton, and then Mr. William Colby, of course, was running the Phoenix program in Southeast Asia. But these were pretty low-key people until Watergate, and then their names really surfaced. Alan Dulles had worked with the Central Intelligence Agency for 16 years. He was the head of it for 11 years. He was removed from being director of the CIA by John Kennedy after the Bay of Pigs, because Kennedy feared this hidden government. And as soon as John Kennedy was murdered, Alan Dulles was put on the Warren Commission to handle all evidence of the conspiracy that involved Lee and Rena Oswald. Not the physical evidence of the homicide, but the conspiratorial aspects. Alan Dulles was appointed originally by President Eisenhower to set up the Central Intelligence Agency after he had been in Germany in 1944, 45, 46, working with the heads of Nazi intelligence and Nazi generals and government officials, even during the war while our men were dying. And then he was to come home and head and start the Central Intelligence Agency on the recommendation of his very own brother, John Foster Dulles, who at that time was Secretary of State. Eisenhower was weak and war-weary, and he was described in a book called The Captive President, kept in the White House as a symbol, but all statesmanship and decisions of the Cold War policy and the reconstruction of Germany were under John Foster Dulles, along with his brother, Alan Dulles. The CIA was set up to inform us about other countries that might invade us, such as the Japanese bombing of Pearl Harbor. Actually, its purpose was to protect the multinational corporations that couldn't defeat communism during World War II in Germany, and began to set up the conditions by which they would get ready for World War III and the Fourth Reich by ensuring that these Nazis set up this network. In the book, Galen, Spy of the Century, Cookeridge refers to General Walter Bedell Smith. He was a military general. He was the first head of the Central Intelligence Agency in 1950. That was the year of the Korean War, of the testing of our military with Nazis in getting a foothold in Southeast Asia. To Walter Smith, Walter Bedell Smith, head of the CIA, came his deputy director, Alan Dulles. And Mr. Cookeridge said, "We must give them the palm or the hand for laying the sound foundation of which the great network of CIA stations throughout the world is built." Alan Dulles succeeded Smith as being director of the CIA. He began to devise foreign policy himself, such as the Bay of Pigs invasion. And President Truman had to say then, in quotes, "The CIA has been diverted from its original assignment and has become a policy-making arm of the government." Truman said he was always against the building up of an American Gestapo, even though Mr. Truman, President Truman, was the one who hid and stop the investigation of the Nazi money in the Swiss banks, form the National Security Council, and let Mr. Oppenheimer's atomic bombs be dropped in Nagasaki and Hiroshima. It was Alan Dulles, according to Cookeridge, who gave the post-war career of Nazi General Reinhard Gehlen the initial impetus, without which Hitler's former intelligence chief would never have reached the powerful position of eminence he had in what was left of the free world. Gehlen's chief sponsor after World War II was Alan Dulles, who was an attorney for the Rockefellers and the large corporations. Dulles took over Hitler's intelligence operation and duplicated it in forming our National Security Council. Cookeridge said Dulles provided the vast finance that Gehlen needed to turn it into the largest, most efficient espionage machine in the Western world. I'm mostly quoting here Cookeridge, but the forming of the National Security Council, this is an insert of mine. He says, in quotes, Dulles guided and encouraged Gehlen and protected him. Dulles enabled Hitler's agent, chief of intelligence, Reinhard Gehlen, to become the head of the Federal German Intelligence Service in 1956, which provided 70% of NATO's military intelligence. So if NATO is telling President Carter that the government of Russia is stronger than us, that the embassy is getting radiation from the Russians, that the Russians are falsely imprisoning certain people that aren't spies, if the Cold War is becoming a hot war in Europe as it is today, these are Reinhard Gehlen's men who are continuing to feed this information about Zaire, where the Russian rockets are supposed to be, not the Russian, I'm sorry, the German Nazi rockets are in Zaire. It is those people that are saying the Cubans are there. Other officials are saying the Cubans are not there. The Nazi intelligence operation is completely in control of the bulk of material coming out of NATO and going into the hands of the presidents of the United States. Reinhard Gehlen, according to Cookeridge, applied strict rules. He was conditioned to obey authority unquestionably. By 1946, working for the Americans, he had already given a quarter of a century to the Weimar Republic and then Hitler's Third Reich. Gehlen gave 25 years to them and 50 to the Central Intelligence Agency. Well, it's not quite 50 yet, from 45 to 78. It's not quite. He'll have an anniversary soon, but that's many years with the American intelligence community. He had an obsessive single-mindedness all his life, according to Cookeridge. The vital need was to resist communism at all costs. Even if America becomes fascist, I might add, his goal was to stop communism. He resolved at the end of the war to change his masters and work for the USA in his crusade against Stalinism. Gehlen was anonymous. He was lonely, withdrawn, self-effacing, didn't make friends easily, needed no public acclaim. To Reinhard Gehlen, Hitler's chief of intelligence, his positive aim was always a mean to an end. So if you see Newsweek on the stands this week with the sickle and Mr. Brzezinski and the call for another war, remember that Mr. Brzezinski is one of Reinhard Gehlen's agents, put in there by the Nazis, stirring trouble against Russia. Even if it bankrupts this nation, even if it ruins this nation, these foreigners have to head our Social Security, National Security Council, not Social Security, and take over our foreign policy to serve the Nazi spy masters that we fought in World War II. First we financed them, then we protected them, and now they're getting ready for another route. In the book, Gehlen's Spy of the Century, he's got a section here on Egypt, which I'll read to you, parts of it, page 352 and 353. And maybe this will whet your appetite, and you'll check this book out of the library. It said, when the British government decided to contract out of Egypt, the United States took over as the world policeman and moved in. In 1951, Alan Dulles sent one of his leading Middle East experts, Kermit Roosevelt, into Egypt. He had already accomplished difficult assignments in Syria and Iran. And if you read the book, Do You Really Want to Be Rich?, it talks about Kermit Roosevelt disguised as a missionary with machine guns under his robe, helping to kick out Mossadegh to put the Iranian government, the Shah of Iran, into power. He had served the CIA in Syria and in Iran, so they sent him to Egypt to King Farouk, who they described as hopeless, and they wanted to take over the control of Egypt. Now, Israel had been made a country by the United Nations and the governments of the world after the Holocaust in 1948. So in 1951, it became necessary to put into power a charming young colonel by the name of Gamal Abdel Nasser, who belonged to Hitler's Bormann Brotherhood, who was an agent of Reinhard Gehlen during World War II. Now, they put Mr. Nasser in, they eased out King Farouk, King Faisal was to die later in Saudi Arabia. They eased out King Farouk and put in Nasser, and they had a great relationship going with him. He immediately imprisoned all of the leaders that he associated, in quotes, with the Communist Party, but the purpose was a Nazi takeover of Egypt. And then the Americans began to shell out $40 million a year into Egypt's economy in order to support Mr. Nasser with intelligence. Cookery says that Nasser then needed men to organize his secret service, to direct his espionage and his training saboteurs against Israel. Now, this is in 1951. Israel was made a country in 1948, and the CIA then took over in 51 and brought in top Nazis to direct their activities against Israel that had only existed for 3 years. Those Jews hadn't suffered enough, and Mr. Nasser of the Bormann Brotherhood didn't want a Jewish country right next to him, so the CIA came. Kukri said they brought in their advisor, the American advisor, turned to Reinhard Gehlen and told him to recommend qualified people to sabotage and train against Israel. So they took his experts from Pulak. He had several men who were doing espionage against the British during the war when the British were fighting the Nazis. So the CIA brought in people that had fought the British, our allies, in a war in Libya, Egypt, and Iran. They fought our very allies, and we brought the people we were fighting in as the advisors. We brought the Nazis in to help sabotage Israel and other countries in the Middle East, and even the people that were fighting Britain were not war criminals after that bloody war, but were brought in for the job. Reinhard Gehlen suggested his colleague, ex-SS Secret Service Sturmbannführer Otto Skorensky of Zeppelin fame, and he took on an assignment in Egypt. After the war, Skorensky had spent 3 years in American captivity in Germany as a suspect war criminal. He was released in July 1948, 2 months after Israel was made a country in May of 48. He had been living in Spain. He was a prosperous engineer in the engineering business. They told him that he would get a salary larger than Nasser's by the CIA, by the United States government would give Skorensky a larger salary than the president, the head of Egypt. Then Alan Dulles and Reinhard Gehlen, Hitler's intelligence chief, approached Skorensky's father-in-law, the notorious Dr. Hallmar Schacht, who was Hitler's financial wizard, who was acquitted at Nuremberg, and he had an 8-year sentence which was squashed during the denazification program and the laws, and he had become a bank president in Dusseldorf. And so they took on Dr. Hallmar Schacht, a close friend and associate of Clay Shaw, who later worked in New Orleans with regards to the assassination of John Kennedy. Here they were getting the Mossadegh out in Iran and Farouk out of Egypt and soon Kennedy out of the presidency of the United States. Skorensky worked in Egypt for a year, and then he left Nasser's Secret Service in the hands of other SS, Secret Service, and Gestapo men. He recruited 50 of them to come to Egypt, who had gotten safe hiding in Argentina, Brazil, Paraguay, Spain, where their safe haven from Allied persecution as war criminals had protected them, and now they could be put into use in the Middle East. Among his assistants was a high official of Goebbels' propaganda ministry and Heinrich Himmler's RSHA. His name was Franz Bunch, B-U-N-S-C-H, an expert on Jewish matters. He had worked with Adolf Eichmann on the Final Solution during the war. He wrote a book on the sexual habits of the Jews that's supposed to be the most vicious pornographic document ever produced by the Nazis. The German intelligence in Cairo looked to Reinhard Gehlen, Hitler's chief of intelligence, for advice, and he appointed a liaison officer for them. He sent him from Germany. He was a bird of the same feather, according to Kukrich, an SS officer from the Gestapo. Deputy Reich leader of the Hitler Youth, Mr. Hermann Lauterbacher. The German-led Egyptian Secret Service achieved little against Israel. This is what Cookridge is saying in 71, which I don't believe at all. He goes on that they fomented that Suez War, but it managed to foment much mischief in Arab countries and other Arab countries. The Egyptian Secret Service engaged in subversion intrigue in no fewer than six Arab countries during this period. And if they did it during that period, those Nazis are still there doing it now. And you can see why none of the Arab countries want to coexist with Israel, even though that piece of land, which is only the size of Los Angeles County, is progressive and isn't hurting anybody in the Middle East. The Nazis have instigated in every country through the SS and the associates of Himmler and Heydrich and Eichmann to never be satisfied until Israel's erased. That is the promise of these oil people to these Nazi chiefs in exchange for their agents, and sooner or later they'll do it. This book says that the BND, which was Galen and post-war German intelligence, never relinquished their interest in the Middle East. They set up several residences, which was their Polak term for their foreign branches, equivalent to our CIA stations in Arab capitals. In 1958, Galen was involved with some of Nasser's enemies, such as King Saud of Saudi Arabia, whose secret service he modernized. And Reinhard Galen brought in radio communication system for Saudi Arabia. The Nazis set that up for them, and then the king had given him a jewel-encrusted sword, as well as fees to the Galen men. In the Cairo residency of Nazi intelligence, the BND, Reinhard Galen sent one of his senior officers, 35-year-old Gerhard Bosch, B-A-U-C-H, the stepson of Galen's vice president. When Galen had his large operation, Galen's vice president was the stepson of this man, Major General Hans Heinrich Werditzky. Mr. Bosch lived in Cairo. The cover was that he represented the Quant Corporation, Q-U-A-N-D-T, which is heavy industry in Germany. At Damascus, the BND, those of the Nazis, set up residence with an ex-SS man from the Hauptsturmfuhrer, Alois Brunner, B-R-U-N-N-E-R, alias working over in the Middle East by the name of George Fischer, who posed as the director of a German-Syrian trading company. Brunner later joined Bunch in Cairo. They had been old colleagues. They worked under Eichmann in the RSHA Jewish Department. You can see that the concern that I have, that I felt repetitious on KLRB, but I can say it over and over again on these tapes, is that the network of the Nazis that resettled with unlimited money, unlimited agents in this Galen operation is the explanation for what is happening in America and the world and around the world today. And it's a large organization. They call themselves the Spider, the Odessa. They have the cooperation of every president of the United States with the exception of John Kennedy. It's funny because Joe Kennedy was brought home as ambassador from England because he seemed too pro-Nazi, and J. Edgar Hoover felt that there was too much information to make him suspect not to keep him there any longer. But Joe Kennedy's son, John, broke some of the rules when he fired Alan Dulles and when he wanted to expose the people behind the Bay of Pigs operation and wanted to call a halt to that kind of multinational grab for organized crime that was working down in Cuba. Kennedy broke the rules. In the book, Galen Spy of the Century, on the back of the book, on the fly cover, it describes a little bit about Galen from an obscure officer. He rose to be Hitler's chief of intelligence against the Soviet Union. Reinhard Galen infiltrated spies into Stalin's war council and encouraged Stalin to kill some of his best friends and told them they were enemies. He organized the werewolves, the young people who were to carry on the tradition of Adolf Hitler. He worked with Heinrich Himmler, the man who set up the concentration camps, with Meyer Heydrich, who formed Interpol, Hitler's police system, and began conceiving the idea of the final solution for getting rid of all Jews in the world. Reinhard Galen worked with General Vasiloff and the White Russian Army of Liberation. In the Dallas-Fort Worth area, members of the Galen operation and the Vasiloff's army appeared as friends of Lee and Marina Oswald, and that's how I happened to hit upon them when I was doing my research. Certain people, such as Valentina Ray, Igor Voshinin, Mrs. Voshinin, Elena Hall, Alex Kleiner, Ilya Mamatov, Anna Meller, and many others I don't have time to name. Our time is running out because these tapes get cut off. They're not always the same length. So I'll stop now before we end in the middle of a sentence. This is Mae Bressel in Carmel, California. It's June 16th, 1978, tape number 328.